I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, the Bible retold, or at least re-illustrated, in a distinctive style, and you get your turn to talk back to us, and we gladly listen. But first, it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about whatever's in the news and whatever's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs this week for a shape-up are freelance writer and reporter Jimmy Israel, editor and civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and I'd also like to welcome screenwriter Alan McElroy to the barbershop. I may jump in, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Hey, hey, fellas. Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey, Jimmy. What's going
good,
on?
Man. Doing good.
Yo, well, check this out. Skeletons come creeping out of the closet as the New York Times reports that Senator John McCain's close ties with a female lobbyist made some of his advisors uncomfortable. Yo, Ruben, does it matter in the end?
No, I don't think so. This is a nothing story, and I'll tell you why. I spent 2 years in Arizona covering John McCain for the Arizona Republic, and I would never have been able to get a story like this into the paper. There was no there in this story. If you came to me and told me that John McCain had a romantic relationship with a lobbyist and that influenced the way he dealt with the lobbyist clients, then that's a grand slam home run. You got me.
Right.
But the story doesn't prove that either they had a romantic relationship or that said relationship influenced how he dealt with the clients. I don't see anything there.
Right. Me neither. Because, I mean, there's no there. I mean, this story has all kind of sieves. I mean, if I'm sitting there, the editor, and somebody pushes across a story, across my desk with all these anonymous sources, and he said, she said, I'm like, yo, you better go give me some names.
Well, not
bro.
Even the – we can use anonymous sources, but I'm telling you what. When you tell me that basically the story is that some staffers felt uncomfortable about the relationship, so the staffers maybe thought that there was a romantic relationship – I'm going to need something more than that.
Wait a
minute.
There is a named source.
Yeah.
There is a named source. Arsalan, maybe you want to weigh in. But
Well, I think both what we're seeing here with McCain and the whole Michelle Obama thing recently is what we call front-runner stories. Now that we have a definite presumptive front-runner in the Republican race and Barack Obama now is the presumptive front-runner in the Democratic race, it's sort of, you know, what we saw with Howard Dean's bellowing yawp. You know, the media now has to find stories. I do agree with Ruben to an extent. Although, you know, there was I think it was a former chief of staff of McCain's, or it was a senior level staffer.
Whose name?
Yeah,
I mean, Washington I guess the part that steps out to me is that Washington's all about relationships.
Absolutely.
And who can get in to see who.
It's
same
access.
Is true with reporters.
It's
you know, who can I get in to see? Mm-hmm. And if you've got a named source saying that they had a meeting with a person to say, stay away from this
at
guy.
Union
this is John Weaver.
That's,
that was John Weaver.
John Weaver, right.
Former advisor.
Former top strategist for the campaign. He actually had a meeting with this woman, takes it upon himself to say, stay away from John McCain. That's a little different than we have proof that John McCain and this woman were involved in a relationship.
Well, they say they
weren't. Weaver was being overprotective.
Well, no, but Ruben, also you have to understand when a former top strategist, top senior advisor for McCain is going on record in the New York Times saying that this is, you know, something that you might want to investigate. You know, obviously, I agree with you. I don't think that there's a preponderance of evidence in any way, but I definitely think that it was a story. I don't think it was a non-story.
Okay. You know what? Hey, Mac, do you think this is going to stop McCain's swagger at all with the voting public?
Not at all. I agree with you. There's nothing to back up this story at this point. I think what you see anytime somebody starts to run out front, if you stub your toe, they're going to try and see how you're going to react to it. And so I think we're seeing, you know, shells being lobbed across the bow, and then we're seeing, you know, do they overreact or do they underreact? What's the response from the front runners? They're all going to face this. You know, Barack is going to see this happen somewhere. They're going to find that he got a C on a spelling test when he was in third grade and somehow make a big deal out of it.
Well, all check this out. I heard this morning that the New Republic is about to publish a story, okay, about the dialogue at the New York Times, the fight in the newspaper about whether they should have gone to press with this particular story. So
right.
This was a very divisive subject, even within the newspaper. They couldn't figure out if this was really a story.
Yeah, I read about that. But you know what? I mean,
That doesn't make it not a story.
You know what? I mean, Michelle, give me some juice here. I mean, for me as a reporter, I just cannot deal with a story propped up with anonymous sources. Is that just me here? Am I crazy?
It's not just you, and you're not crazy, but that doesn't mean anonymous sources are not legitimate to be used. There are some stories you would never get without anonymous sources. Watergate, the Watergate investigation was built on anonymous sources, the identity of which was only revealed 20 years later, a couple of months ago. So you know, this is exactly what's supposed to happen. People are supposed to debate it. They're supposed to debate the motivations. They're supposed to debate the quality of the evidence and the track record of the people presenting the information. That's how it's supposed to work. But some stories require these. And so the question is the foundation of evidence strong enough to for you to believe it? And that's a decision all of us have to make as individuals.
I hear you.
You don't want to rely too much on anonymous sourcing. And I think that in the last 5-10 years, at least, in my opinion, I think that journalism has taken a big lean towards that, where people are just solely relying on that.
Well, I certainly
you also have to consider,
I certainly hope that the Times has it right this time. In other McCain news, you know, McCain's wife is taking pot shots at Michelle Obama's patriotism. You know, the political tricks are getting grimier and grimier by the minute. Yo, Michelle, we got some tape on that Michelle Obama thing, right?
We do, and we also will have it on our website, npr.org/tellmemore. Here it is.
Let me tell you something. For the first time in my adult lifetime, I'm really proud of my country.
Wow. I don't know. Hey, Mac, how do you read that? Do you read that as unpatriotic?
Absolutely not. I mean, I think what she's saying is, at this point in history, in America, we're seeing kids step up and really take an interest in the political process that we haven't seen this happen in a generation. You know, not since the late 60s have we seen this kind of mobilization. And I think she's very proud of that. I'm very proud to see that kids are finally kind of stepping away from, you know, who am I going to vote for on American Idol to who am I going to vote for in the election.
Well, and I also think that, you know, going back to what I was saying earlier, this is the whole front runner story. You know, now that Barack is a presumptive front runner, it's every little thing is going to be magnified. This is nothing more than rhetorical hyperbole. She was trying to make a point. I think it was a very valid and cogent point that she was making. And, you know, you have some people who are going to cherry pick that and try to spin it in a negative way because he's the front runner now.
The R, get some of this.
Okay, tell you what, I'm gonna agree with half of it and disagree with half of it. I'm gonna say I agree absolutely. This is not evidence of her not being patriotic. I think that more than that, she is entitled to her opinion and she is entitled to her experience. And it made me angry that white male conservatives at conservative media outlets jumped on this comment immediately, as if to say somehow that they're the arbiters of whether a black woman in America should or should not feel proud of her country. So that's out of bounds, and I'm with her on that. Got it? Cool. Beyond that, though, we have a problem.
Now that I got that out of the way.
Now that we got that out of the way.
We got a problem. Wow. We got a problem. Okay. Here's the problem, right? Barack Obama's success and Hillary Clinton's failure are all wrapped up in one thing. Barack Obama is positive and optimistic and hopeful, and Hillary is Debbie Downer.
Okay?
Right?
Debbie Downer. So now I read this nice story into the Los Angeles Times that actually puts out the Michelle Obama thing and says that Michelle, unlike her husband, tends to dwell on the negative. So that's a problem, and that she cannot take that in the general campaign if he's the nominee. So my words lovingly, you know, with all love and cariño, Michelle Obama, just shut up. Don't say this anymore.
No. Hold on.
Let this dude get in there right
all
quick.
Right.
You know what? This is going to make me really unpopular, as if I care, but check this out.
No.
You know what? I've said this before.
Right.
I've said this before, and I'll say it again. You know, when you're handling your business, sometimes it's better to leave your people at home, no matter how pretty, no matter how influential you think they are. Michelle Obama needs to fall back Bill Clinton style before she says something indefensible. I believe that.
Yeah, and Bill,
I absolutely believe that.
Bill Clinton.
And I mean, she does have that Jackie O thing jumping, and she's got some of that same charisma, but she's going to say something the same way Bill said something, and then Obama's going to be sitting there holding the bag, just like Hillary was sitting there holding the bag. And sometime when you're handling your business, people leave your people at home.
Can I say something?
You know what?
Can I just say something?
Go ahead.
Just quickly here. This reminds me of the Hillary Clinton moment 10 years ago when she talked about the cookies.
Yeah.
You know, I could have, you know, stayed home and, you know, had teas and baked cookies, but I chose to vote. And so she had, like, you know, tons of cookies being sent to her. Women started sending her, I assume mainly women, sending her cookies saying, take your cookies. Here's your cookies.
I just think this is
kind of
Obama,
when you're the spouse,
Michelle,
right?
Mm-hmm. The problem with Michelle Obama is she went to Princeton undergrad, Harvard Law School. She makes a good living. Her and Barack make like $400,000 a year. America wants to know that people like that feel proud of this country.
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Ruben Navarrete, and Alan McElroy in the Barbershop. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. All right, fellas. The Obamas can't make any friends because they're not even getting any love from Tavis these days. Because he's dissed Obama for not accepting an invitation to the, quote, fingers up, State of the Black Union, quote, fingers down convention. Yo, Michelle, we got a piece of tape on that somewhere, right?
Well, let me just say, in the spirit of full disclosure, that I have, you know, actually participated in the State of the Black Union in years past. And so, you know, I'm kind of a fan of the fingers up State of the Black Union, but
I'm still waiting for my invitation.
I think you might be waiting a while longer.
But
just to clarify, so anyway, here's the deal. So Tavis extended this invitation. Barack Obama declined, saying, you know, I'm kind of busy running for president here, and some people are not appreciating the fact that Tavis is making issue of it. We've got a clip from a blogger, Boyce Watkins, talking about the Tavis and Obama smackdown.
By attacking Barack Obama, you're making a huge mistake, man. You know, Barack Obama is so popular right now that people want to go, people would go into the bathroom while he's using it.
What?
You're not going to get anywhere with this. And based on your Black World comments and the feedback I've seen, I'm shocked because I've never seen any case in which all the comments were 100% in the same direction. You know, people are saying, Tavis, you're a hater. Let Barack Obama run for the White House. Leave him alone.
There you have it.
Wow, that's deep, man. Hey, Mac, who appointed Tavis king of all Black people? I wasn't at that vote.
Well, I think, you know, the funny thing is I think Barack is taking a smart stand here. I mean, he does not want to just be limited to being identified as the Black candidate. He has to reach the entire country.
Right.
And that's something that he fought, you know, against the Clinton campaign, where they were really trying to minimize him and kind of ghettoize him, and he would not be silenced. He would not be pushed in a corner. And I don't think he wants to have that title kind of over his head. He has a huge cut. He's got Latinos. He's got everybody to go out and talk to, and he's got to push forward.
Well, and again,
A-Train.
Again, well, first of all, Jimmy, if you want to be invited, I think you should take the fingers up quotes down. But no, I think the important thing to keep in mind, again—
Not to mention his blog.
Of course.
Which is like dining out on Tavis lunch for however long, but I digress.
Well, again, because Barack's the presumptive nominee, now he has to run a 50-state strategy. And let's remember that the State of the Black Union is in Louisiana, a state that Barack has already won. I assure you, if it was in Texas, Ohio, or Pennsylvania with upcoming primaries— You'd see Barack front and center.
Right.
He's running a 50-state strategy, and that's what he has to do. He does not want to be seen as the Black candidate. He is the American candidate, and I think that that's something important to keep in mind.
I think it's also important to keep in mind that Arsalan is a Barack supporter. Just thought I'd mention it.
Wow.
Jimmy, I got to say,
I got to say,
about 10, 12 years ago, I used to host a radio show with Tavis Smiley in Los Angeles. I consider him a friend and a brother, and I'll tell you, I think this was him going too far. I think this was my brother's ego getting the best of him. People thinking that it was about him and not about Barack Obama running for president. Having said that, I know that what set Tavis Smiley off was that the Barack Obama campaign apparently had leaked to the press that Barack Obama wasn't going to this event. And so for better or for worse, what I think Tavis got into his head was somehow that Barack Obama was running against the Black community to try to tell white folks in the media and elsewhere that he was not feeling this urge to go down there and be part of Black America because he's talking to all America. And I think that's something, when you read the blogs, the only stuff that I see that's out there that's sympathetic to Tavis at all is stuff that falls into that line. That basically African-Americans who feel suspicious that somebody running the Obama campaign is trying to convince white folks that he's not going to be all that Black.
All right, well, you know what? The R might do.
On that note.
Yeah, I'm saying well stated. And in other fights, in other hand-to-hand combat, you know, the Oscars will be handed out next week, and people of color were kind of locked out. You know, besides Ruby Dee and, of course, Javier Bardem. Is that the right pronunciation?
Bardem.
Thank you.
Bardem.
Thank you. Both of them got a nod, but it seems like there's a lot of color missing from the Oscar nominations. Now, Alan, A-Mac, we all know you're an insider. Does race play at all into the Oscar nominations?
Oh, absolutely. I feel that you're going to see a lot of bias. I mean, in this regard, we've had great performances from Denzel, from Forrest Whitaker, and Great Debaters. We had great directing there as well. American Gangster, we also saw a great performance from Denzel. And I feel that the Oscar committee, you know, they've given Denzel the nod before, and they feel they've serviced that. So they move on. And you see that time and time again. There's a definite bias that takes place.
I don't think it's a race bias. I think it's a bias against people who win Oscars. And I think, you know, Tom Hanks won 2 Oscars in a row, and then he got snubbed for Apollo 13. Maybe he deserved it, but you won 2 already. I mean, there's a sense that folks want to move on to somebody else. It wasn't that long ago that the Oscars celebrated that great night where Sidney Poitier got the Lifetime Achievement Award. Halle Berry and Denzel Washington won Best Actor and Actress. Hello, mm-hmm. That's a good night. That's a good night, okay? That's,
right.
What's the complaint?
Well,
at this point, though, I think they feel like the black... Black
and Latinos have a night like that, and then we'll complain.
Let's have Latinos have a
night like that, and then we can complain. I mean, come on.
Well, it's the year of Javier Bardem, I can tell you that much.
Okay. Well, let's all go around with our Oscar picks. Ruben, who you got?
I got Daniel Day-Lewis for Best Actor, for sure, and There Will Be Blood.
Mm-hmm.
There Will Be Blood for Best Movie.
All right. A-Mac?
There Will Be Blood was an amazing film. Daniel Day-Lewis' performance was fantastic. And I really want that film to be the winner here.
Okay. A-Train.
I'm going to agree on the movie, There Will Be Blood. I think Javier Bardem, I think it's his year. I mean, the dude just gave a sick performance that I've never seen before.
Well, he was in No Country, right?
Right. But okay, I'm talking about for his individual acting.
Well, you know what? If it were up to me, I think I'd have to write in Dennis Kucinich for acting like he ever thought he was going to be president, and his whole campaign. Ouch. And ladies and gentlemen, I believe that's a wrap. Thank you so much for coming, and I got to kick it back to the lady of the house, Michelle Martin.
And it was so glad you didn't ask me because I have not seen any of these movies. I have 4-year-old twins. I think it's going to be 5 years before I get to see another movie. But anyway, I'll take your word for it. So I'll get your help in filling out my Oscar pool sheet. So thank you. Freelance writer Jimmy Israel joined us from WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida. Civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar is a contributing editor for Islamica magazine, and he joined us from our studios here in Washington. Ruben Navarrete of the San Diego Union-Tribune joined us from KPBS in San Diego, California, where he also writes for CNN.com. And screenwriter Alan McElroy joined us from WCPN in Cleveland. You can find links to all of our barbershop guests at our website, npr.org/tellmemore. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Yep, yep.